Okay. Are we on the record?
Okay.
All right. Good morning, everybody. My name is Pat Ward. I'm an administrative law judge pursuant to temporary appointment designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings at the request of the Public Service Commission to serve as the hearing officer for this hearing. The commissioners will not be present today, but they will receive a recommendation from me at the conclusion of the hearing. There will be some opportunity for the attorneys to prepare some findings of fact for my review and approval, and then I make a recommended decision, and then the commission makes its decision based on that recommended decision. There is a record that they can listen to of the hearing today, and they will be doing that. They're very diligent about their job and about digging into these things. And so to the extent that there's members of the public that want to have input, there will be time for that. That will be allowed later in the proceedings today. This is a hearing on the application of Senex Pipeline LLC regarding the Prosper Terminal Project for Certificate of Corridor Compatibility and Route Permit and waiver of procedures to authorize construction for a 1.0-mile diameter circle around a 63-acre service area in Cass County to connect with an existing Senex 8-inch pipeline. This is North Dakota Public Service Commission case number PU-15-798. The record will show that it is a little past 9 a.m. Central Daylight Time, March 29, 2016, at the Harry McGovern Alumni Center, 1241 North University Drive, Fargo, North Dakota. The time, date, and place set by the notice of filing and notice of hearing issued by the North Dakota Public Service Commission on February 10, 2016. On December 2, 2015, Senex filed its application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit and for a waiver of procedures and time schedules for the Prosper facility. The application and request are set forth in a notice of filing and notice of hearing, and the proposed location is shown by the map, which is part of the notice. The notice of filing and notice of hearing specified the following issues to be considered and determined at this hearing. The issues to be considered as specified on the application for waiver of procedures and time schedules are: one, are the proposed facilities of such length, design, location, or purpose that they will produce minimal adverse effects and that adherence to applicable procedures and time schedules may be waived? And two, is it appropriate for the commission to waive any procedures and time schedules as requested in the application? The issues with regard to the certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit are: one, will the location, construction, and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota? Two, are the proposed facilities compatible with environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources? Three, will the proposed facility locations minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion? Mr. Mann, would you please state your appearance for the record and the appearance of anyone who will be testifying today?
Thank you, Your Honor. Wade Mann, Crawley Fleck, PLLP, appearing on behalf of Senex Pipeline, LLC. And appearing at the table with me is Mick G, the engineering manager for Senex Pipeline. He will be one of the witnesses. And Mr. Jim Dawson with SWCA Environmental Consultants will also be a witness testifying on behalf of Senex Pipeline.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mann. Mr. Pelham, would you please state your appearance for the record and the appearance of any member of commission staff who will participate in the hearing?
Good morning. On behalf of the Public Service Commission, I'm Zach Pelham. I'm a Special Assistant Attorney General. To my right is Julie Prescott. Julie is a Public Utilities Analyst with the Public Service Commission. Ms. Prescott may have some questions of the witnesses, and we would ask that she be permitted to ask questions as well as me.
Any objection, Mr. Mann? Okay. Ms. Prescott will be allowed to ask questions. If there's anyone present other than witnesses for Senex or the commission who will or may testify or comment concerning this matter, we'll do that upon the completion of the Senex presentation. I encourage you to take the opportunity to tell the commissioners anything you think the commission should know about this matter and to offer any information you may have for the commission's decision. I assure that what you have to say is important to the commission and will be considered by the commission. If you have any questions about your presentation or if you have any documents, maps, photos, and the like that you would like to show to the commission or make a part of the record, we can talk about that during a break after the company presents its evidence as to how we'll go about putting that into evidence. I do also encourage the public, if the public has questions or input, to take advantage of one of the breaks to talk to the company representatives and see if they can get their questions answered off the record. Sometimes it's just a question of knowing what's actually going on. You may have heard some rumors or something like that, and that's one of the reasons why we ask you to wait to give your input until after the company has made its presentation, because oftentimes that clears up a lot of the questions that people have. Any opening remarks by counsel?
Your Honor, I don't have an opening statement, but if I could just briefly address exhibits.
Sure.
Senex has 5 exhibits that they're intending to offer, and I've presented copies to Your Honor and to counsel and PSC staff. Exhibit 1 is the application. Exhibit 2 is an executed copy of the certification relating to order provisions. Exhibits 3 and 4 are letters from the State Historical Society office, and Exhibit 5 is Senex Pipeline's most recent 10-year plan. And I did discuss with counsel prior to the hearing, and he is agreeable to stipulating to admission of the exhibits up front, if it's okay with Your Honor.
You're willing to stipulate to all 5?
Yes.
Okay, all 5 exhibits will be received. Any other opening comments or remarks?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, are you ready to call your first witness?
I am. Mr. Mick G. will be my first witness.
Okay, Mr. G.
Would you like him to go?
Mr. G., it's my duty to advise you of the penalty for perjury in this state before you testify. Perjury is a false statement under oath of a material fact made by a person who knows or does not believe the statement to be true at the time it is made. Perjury is a Class C felony. A Class C felony is subject to a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison, a fine of $10,000, or in some cases both a fine and prison time can be imposed. Having been advised of the penalty for perjury, please raise your right hand. You promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Mann.
Mick, could you please state your name and give us your business address?
My name is Mick G. My business address is Post Office Box 909, Laurel, Montana, 59044.
And what is your position with Senex Pipeline?
I am the engineering manager in the Pipelines and Terminals Department.
Could you briefly describe the project Senex is proposing?
We are proposing to construct and operate what we have called the Prosper Terminal. It will be located on just over 63 acres of land, approximately 1.3 miles southeast of the town of Prosper, and immediately adjacent to Senex's 8-inch refined petroleum products pipeline that was previously approved by the commission in case number PU-126-90-625. The proposed terminal would supply refined petroleum products to NuStar Pipeline's Laurel Interconnect Pipeline that was recently approved by the commission in case number PU-15-674. The NuStar project will consist of approximately 7.3 miles of 8-inch diameter refined petroleum products pipeline connecting Senex's proposed Prosper Terminal with NuStar's existing pipeline system.
And could you briefly describe the infrastructure that will be constructed at Prosper Terminal?
The project will include 3 145,000-barrel storage tanks and 1 10,000-barrel tank that will receive product from a mainline pressure relief valve in the event of a pipeline upset condition. It will also include an incoming receipt metering manifold for measurement of refined product, receipt and delivery valve manifolds in and out of the site tankage, a booster pump station used to deliver products from tankage to an adjacent pump station owned and operated by NuStar, and a mainline pump station and delivery meters used to deliver products from tankage back into the existing 8-inch Senex mainline that continues into a Magellan terminal in West Fargo. It will also include approximately 1 mile of electrical feeder supply to a control equipment building, a supervisory control and data acquisition system, a water storage pond or tank for fire response capability, and an office shop. The project includes a minor reconfiguration of the pipeline within the property boundary for the terminal. The length of the pipeline reconfiguration is approximately 2,300 feet. The reconfiguration route is depicted on the site diagram in Appendix A and will maintain the maximum design flow rate of the existing pipeline, which is 24,000 barrels per day.
And Mick, could you elaborate on the pipeline reconfiguration and how that will be done?
Our mainline pipeline currently goes across this property and parallels the railroad track on the north side. The reconfigured pipeline will angle off of that down towards the pump station building and go through it and then back out to the main line. It will be constructed, first of all, the existing main line will remain in operation as it currently is during the construction period. The reconfigured pipeline will be built in place with ends available for tie-ins at a later date. Once we get to the point where we're ready to tie the new facility in, we'll use nitrogen to purge out the existing pipeline system so that we would then be enabled to cut the line and make the welds to tie in the new part of the pipeline system.
Could you please explain the need for the terminal?
Between 2007 and 2013, consumption of petroleum products in North Dakota increased significantly, from 26.4 million barrels per year to 40.7 million barrels per year. The increased demand is expected to continue or increase during the next 10 years. This project, in conjunction with NuStar's recently approved Laurel Interconnect Pipeline, will provide additional storage and distribution capability between Senex's existing pipeline and NuStar's existing North system. The storage provided by the Prosper Terminal will enhance the refined petroleum product supply capabilities of both systems and better ensure that the systems can efficiently meet this increased refined petroleum products customer demand in eastern North Dakota and western Minnesota. If approved, the project will enable Senex to deliver refined petroleum products to its customers in the Fargo-Moorhead area via either its existing system or NuStar's system. Currently, deliveries of refined petroleum products to West Fargo can be hampered by the demand for refined products on a seasonal basis and by the availability of storage capacity in the Magellan Terminal located in West Fargo. If approved, this project will help mitigate seasonal market fluctuations by creating another outlet for the product coming out of our Laurel refinery. It would also greatly enhance the ability to ensure the availability of refined petroleum products during high demand times by having additional storage for product reserves, and will enable more efficient distribution of diesel fuel and gasoline within the state.
And could you describe the process used for coming up with a proposed location for the Prosper Terminal?
The ultimate site selection was a result of a thorough analysis and coordination with area landowners, local officials, agencies, NuStar, and existing infrastructure owners. Senex obtained and analyzed public and proprietary information to identify sensitive areas and features within the study area. We also considered existing rights of way in an effort to maximize co-location with other infrastructure where appropriate. Senex completed cultural and environmental field surveys and additional constructability reviews to further refine the site. Ultimately, the site was selected that meets the project needs, complies with the Commission's siting criteria, and minimizes impacts to landowners, the environment, and existing infrastructure.
What is the status of the land acquisition for the project?
Senex has a grant of option to purchase the property for the site of the Prosper Terminal project, which it intends to exercise pending approval of the project.
And what is the anticipated construction start date?
We had additionally hoped to begin construction in March of 2016, as indicated in the application. Pending approval by the Commission, we now plan to begin construction by early May and to be completed by the summer of 2017.
And what is the estimated cost of the Prosper Terminal project?
The estimated cost is $17 million.
Will the Prosper Terminal facilities be constructed in compliance with applicable safety laws and standards?
Yes, the project will be designed, constructed, maintained, inspected, and operated in accordance with the U.S. Department of Transportation's Pipelines and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration regulations, EPA requirements, the National Electric Code, the Uniform Building Code requirements as used by the City of Fargo, and in accordance with the American Petroleum Institute and other industry standards.
And could you please highlight some of the technologies that will be used in construction to satisfy the safety standards that you've just described with respect to the pipeline reconfiguration?
Our pipelines incorporate the use of an external coating or protective coating on the pipelines and cathodic protection to prevent external pipeline corrosion for all buried pipelines. We incorporate regular internal pipeline inspections using inline inspection tools to detect both internal and external anomalies, including corrosion or denting. We do regular visual tank and equipment inspections. And we have the installation of a supervisory control and data acquisition system, or SCADA, that continuously monitors the flow rates, tank levels, temperatures and pressures of the system, and triggers alarms for events outside normal operating conditions.
What is the status of any zoning approvals that are needed from Raymond Township?
A variance for a zoning change from agricultural to industrial has been approved for the site, and Senex has also been granted a height variance allowing the storage tanks on site to exceed the 35-foot height limit. Senex is still awaiting approval of a certificate of zoning compliance, which is the equivalent of a building permit.
Did the Raymond Township zoning ordinance require a conditional use permit for the project?
No. The zoning change or variance followed by the certificate of zoning compliance is all that is required for our project.
When do you anticipate approval of the certificate of zoning compliance?
Raymond Township is meeting on April 11th to address the certificate of zoning compliance that we have applied for.
Okay. And could you please briefly describe Senex's environmental mitigation plan?
Attached as Exhibit B to the application is Senex's environmental mitigation plan. The plan describes environmental measures to be used during construction of the project in order to minimize potential construction-related impacts. The EMP incorporates environmental best management practices to be implemented by the pipeline contractors. The EMP will be included in contract documents with the contractors. All contractors and subcontractors engaged in construction are expected to follow the EMP requirements. Senex representatives will provide pipeline construction oversight and will have third-party environmental inspectors for each phase of the project construction who are knowledgeable of the environmental mitigation requirements for the project.
Will the Prosper Terminal contain a monitoring system?
Yes. During operation, facility pressure, temperature, level, and flow rate data will be transmitted via satellite to a central SCADA system control center in Laurel, Montana. The SCADA system will provide continuous monitoring of facility operations data 24 hours a day. When change in the data indicates a potential issue with the facility, alarms will be triggered, notifying Senex of the potential issue.
Will Senex conduct periodic inspections, surveillance, and maintenance of the terminal facilities?
Yes, we will. And some examples of the types of inspections that we do. We do monthly visual tank inspections as required by PHMSA. We do monthly leak inspections of all above-ground piping required by EPA. We do aerial overflight inspections of our buried pipeline every 2 weeks as required by PHMSA. We do overpressure device calibrations twice yearly as required by PHMSA. We do inline mainline pipeline inspections every 5 years. And there are others, but these are some examples that I give you.
Sure. Will Senex utilize the one-call system during construction?
Yes. Senex will utilize the 811 one-call system, which is a nationally recognized system to help prevent third-party damage to underground facilities.
Will Senex personnel responsible for the Prosper Terminal be trained in emergency responses and other responding emergencies?
Yes. All Senex personnel are technician-level trained emergency responders per OSHA requirements. Senex also conducts annual spill prevention training, tabletop exercises, and equipment deployment exercises per Coast Guard and EPA regulations. Facility tours and emergency response training will be conducted with local emergency responders.
Does Senex have an emergency response plan in place for the project?
Yes. Senex has a PHMSA-approved plan that covers the entire pipeline system. Once it is operational, the Prosper Terminal will be added to that plan. The response plan details the procedures that would be implemented and resources utilized in the event of an emergency. The safety of Senex personnel, responders, and the public is always the top priority, followed by protection of the environment. The plan includes procedures for notification of local emergency responders to assist in traffic control, site security, evacuations, and fire suppression if needed to ensure the safety of the public. Senex personnel are trained in the incident command system and would work closely with local authorities as part of a unified command in an emergency situation. The response plan also outlines the procedures for isolating, containing, recovering, and cleaning up an oil spill to minimize and mitigate environmental damage. Emergency response resources, manpower, and equipment are listed in the plan, including Senex and contractor resources.
And Mick, has Senex Pipeline filed a 10-year plan?
Yes.
And do you have a copy of what has been marked and admitted as exhibit number 5?
Yes.
And is that a copy of Senex's current 10-year plan?
It is.
And will Senex Pipeline be updating its 10-year plan before July 1st of this year? In accordance with NDCC section 49-22-04?
Yes.
Okay. And do you also have a copy of what has been marked and admitted as exhibit number 2?
Yes.
And is that an executed copy of the certification relating to order provisions for transmission facility siting from the Public Service Commission?
Yes, it has been executed by Richard S. Peterson, who is the president of Senex Pipeline, LLC.
And Mick, does Mr. Peterson have the authority to bind Senex Pipeline, LLC to the requirements in the certification document?
Yes.
And has the certification been filed with the Public Service Commission?
Yes.
Is Senex requesting that the commission approve the Prosper Terminal project and issue a corridor certificate and route permit for the project?
Yes.
And Mick, in the application, you'd indicated that Senex was seeking a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit in January of 2016. That time has passed, but Senex does wish to commence construction early this spring and is seeking the issuance of a corridor certificate and route permit in an expedited manner so that construction may commence as soon as possible. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. I have no further questions for Mr. G at this time. Thank you.
Mr. Pelham, questions for Mr. G?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. G. Just some questions for you. I'm going to start. You were just talking about the emergency response plan. I want to ask you a few questions about that. As far as Senex's spill response, does Senex contract with a outside company for spill response in that event, or does Senex have its own response team?
We have both. We are all trained as emergency responders, so we have, and we have a pipeline gang that gets gathered up and sent in the emergency situation. We also have outside contractors. We have in this area, we have one, and I don't remember the names of the companies, but there's one up in Grand Forks and there's one over in, I believe it's Morris, Minnesota, that are fairly nearby.
But Senex then has contracts with these independent spill response providers in the event of an event. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And as far as you mentioned the employees being trained, sir, can you tell us a little bit about the training? How are they trained? Where does that take place? Who conducts that training?
I really should get our emergency response coordinator up here to answer those questions, but if you want general answers, we have HAZWOPR training that we do once a year. And then we have, as I mentioned in here, we have tabletop exercises that are done on a notification basis quarterly, and then I think it's twice a year that we sit down and have a full-fledged tabletop. We do river drills where we go out and put boom out on the river at designated points that we've got contracted to use. Those are some of the things that we do.
And as far as the number of employees at this proposed facility, how many full-time and part-time employees will be employed by Senex at this particular facility, assuming it's approved?
We plan to have one full-time person at this location. And I would also offer that we have our terminal at Minot that we have approximately 8 people, and they currently float back and forth to Fargo, too, so there is support from our Minot operation.
So will this full-time person, will that be a new position that would be created for an employee of Senex?
Yes.
And what role will that person generally have at this proposed facility?
This fellow will be a technician, and he'll be responsible for the operation and maintenance of the Prosper Terminal site. He'll also be responsible for one calls that we're a member of the one call system, and so anything that comes in. Our guys out of Minot are handling that right now, so that duty will shift to this fella. He'll have responsibilities for care of the Prosper Terminal and then also for care of we've got a smaller facility inside the Magellan Terminal that he will assume responsibility of.
And I'm maybe picking up on something, and you can correct me, but you indicated it's a fellow. Does Senex have someone in mind as far as who this person would be already, or is it going to be someone outside of the company, or do you know?
We do not have anybody in mind presently, and I used a fellow very generically.
That's fine. That's fine. And I knew it would be either one of two, and that's why I asked. But I thought maybe someone had been in mind. Okay. And as far as additional staff, you mentioned Minot. Does Senex have additional pipeline crew, for lack of a better word, in the Fargo-Moorhead area, or would it just be this one person then?
It'll just be this one person. I would add that, you know, our pipeline gang operates out of Billings, Montana, and they cover the whole system. We currently are hiring a new gang foreman that'll be positioned in Minot, and he'll start to assume, he'll be putting together a crew out of Minot that'll help handle the pipeline responsibilities on this end of our system.
And this particular person that's envisioned to work at this proposed facility then would receive the training that you mentioned in the event of an event happening in that particular facility. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
As far as the inspections of the proposed facility and the proposed reroute of the existing pipeline, you mentioned that I think you said inline and mainline inspections, internal inspections every 5 years. Is that using a pig device?
It is, yes.
Okay. And as far as your understanding as to how that data is then analyzed, is that analyzed by Senex? Is that analyzed by a third party and presented to Senex? Can you explain that a little bit for us, please?
We hire an ILI vendor, excuse me, that runs the tool through the line, and they accumulate the data for it. And then they have trained technicians that go through all of the data that comes in off of that and submit to us a report on all of the anomalies that they find out there, and very small to whatever is of any consequence. They grade them, and then they send them to us, and then we have an engineer that sits down and goes through an analysis of what's provided to us. He puts together a plan to go out and verify what they have discovered in their report. So after we've received the report, he puts together his analysis of it. We'll send our crews out, dig up the pipeline, and verify not only what is there, but if it's accurately located and so forth. The technology is getting better all the time. It's
so the receiver then for insertion of this type of device, where, if you know, I assume it's not at this proposed facility, but it's elsewhere on the line. Do you know where that receiver for that would be?
Currently, we launch a pig at our New Rockford station, which in essence there really isn't anything other than a scraper launcher and a scraper receiver. We send it out there and we receive it at West Fargo.
I see. Okay. And as far as the reconfigured portion, and you mentioned Exhibit A, there's a diagram showing the reconfigured portion of this pipeline. That device would go through that reconfigured portion as well. Is that correct?
Yes.
Can I jump in here just and ask questions, Zach? How often do you pig the line? I mean, you do that periodically even after it's in place, correct?
We run what we'd call a maintenance pig through the line. Quarterly, I will commit to. We have intentions of maybe running it a little bit more often, but we absolutely do it on a quarterly basis. So that, and that's just to flush anything out of the line, water that may have settled out of the product, or any debris, if you will, just to make sure that the line is clean.
And that maintenance pig that you're mentioning is different from the data gathering pig that would check for cracks, check for things along those lines. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and that, as I understand it, would be done about every 5 years within PHMSA requirements. Is that right?
The electronic tool, the tool that gathers data for dents and anomalies in the line, that's run every 5 years.
I see. Okay, thank you. As far as the physical inspections exterior, will the individual that would be hired for this proposed facility be doing inspections of the facility, the tank, the tanks, the proposed tanks, the proposed reconfigured line? Will he be doing that within his job qualifications?
Yes, he will.
And he'll be trained to do that?
He will. We have a number of trained instrument technicians throughout our entire operation, and he will be one of those, and he will be trained to do the calibrations of the pressure devices in addition to doing the visuals on the piping and the tanks and the different things I mentioned. The only thing he won't be able to do is the inline inspection.
As far as the reconfigured portion of the proposed pipeline, will foot patrols of that be done as well as aerial patrols?
No. It's just typically the aerial patrols. I mean, it's right, the reconfigured portion is on our land.
Sure.
So
right. As far as then the aerial patrols, is that something that Cenex is doing itself, or is that another company that's hired by Cenex to do that for you and then reports back?
We have, I think it's three or four different companies that we have hired to do different sections of our pipeline, and their pilots and their hired to do that for us.
What do they look for?
They look for the, like, washouts to where you might happen to see the pipeline has been exposed. They look for wet spots on the ground that would be suspicious. They look for construction activity in or around or near our pipeline and call those in. Well, they call any of this stuff in right away that's of major concern, and they issue a report at the end of each flight that they do.
And who are they calling in? Are they calling in into the the group in Montana that's where the base is for the pipeline, or where are they calling it in?
Their initial call and the call goes into our control center, which is a 24/7 manned operation. And then our controllers that work in that location always have a person in the management staff that's on call. So their job is to operate the pipeline. So when they get a call like that, they'll call the on-call person. And then that on-call person takes the responsibility for if you need to dispatch a crew to check it out, if you need to start some sort of an emergency response.
How is it determined internally then whether or not to send out and dispatch a crew to an anomaly that's detected on an aerial patrol?
Usually, it is somewhat subjective, but we tend to err on the side of being overly cautious. And if there's much of anything that they report that even triggers the slightest bit of an alarm on our bases, we'll send somebody out to look at it, to look it over and make sure everything's okay.
You mentioned in your testimony, sir, the SCADA system. And I'm just wondering, that system you testified is monitored from Laurel, Montana, 24 hours, you testified. Is it monitored 7 days a week, 365 days a year?
Absolutely.
Okay. And the personnel then that are monitoring that, can you tell us a little bit about who they are, what they're trained to do, what ability they have to do to detect problems, and if they do detect a problem, what they can do to prevent further problems?
Okay, there's a lot to that.
Yeah, I know. I'm
and
sorry.
That's fine. The guys that we hire for controllers go through some rigorous interviews to be accepted and some qualification testing of general abilities and so forth. Once they're hired, I'm not the guy that's in charge of it, so I don't know all of it, but they go through a program of training. And we have what's called an OQ program, an operator qualification program that is specified by PHMSA. And so it's a lengthy program where the guys have to, there's written things that they have to do. We have a pipeline simulator that we use at our control center that they have to sit down and it will mirror actual pipeline conditions as if you were learning to fly an airplane on a simulator. It's the same sort of thing. It's them operating a pipeline on a computer-based simulator. So they go through all of that, and it's like a six-month program before they're cleared to operate by themselves. And then in our control center, we have two controllers that are on shift at all times, and sometimes a third, depending on how their shifts go together. But if there should happen to be a problem with one of the guys there, there's always a backup on hand.
And for what those, and I'll call them technicians, I know that's probably not the proper terminology, but the technicians then, are they monitoring multiple pipes at the time, or are they monitoring divided between the two of them, one each or something like that?
We have two, generally speaking, two pipeline systems. We have a crude oil pipeline system. We have a products pipeline system. The crude system begins at the Canadian border up by Ketbank, Montana, and ends in Laurel. The product system starts in Laurel and goes to Fargo. And so one dispatcher has control of the crude system, or has responsibility for that, and the other controller has responsibility for the product system. Now, at each of those consoles, there are numerous screens that they utilize to monitor the systems, but all of the screens on both of the systems are capable of shifting over and looking at, let's say, the crude pipeline if you're on the product console and vice versa. So, if you want to call it the drop-dead scenario, if one of our guys just happened to have a heart attack and drop dead, the other guy could take over controls of both pipeline systems.
Okay. And for this particular proposed facility and the proposed line, that the pipeline that's going to that's being proposed to replace the existing pipeline here, Is it possible for the technician in Laurel, Montana, to remotely shut down the pipeline from where they're at?
Yes.
Okay. So if they see an anomaly in the system, in and around this terminal, they have the ability to push a button or whatever.
Absolutely.
And shut it down.
It might be more than one button, but you know he's got the capability of closing valves, shutting in West Fargo, shutting in Prosper, turning the pumps off at Minot that are feeding it.
And as far then as a, you mentioned satellite link up with this proposed facility and the Montana facility, is there a backup to the satellite, like a phone line, or is it just a satellite?
Let me expand the answer maybe just a little bit more than that. Not only do we have backup and it's by phone line, we also have shutdowns that will automatically shut things down in the event of total loss of communication. If you lose satellite and the phone line doesn't come up, it locally will shut down and shut down everything for you. I forgot my train of thought. There was one other thing I was going to say about that. That's the answer.
Does Senex have the ability then, this technology we're talking about, does it have the ability to manually shut down the pipeline in the event of a failure of the electronic technology?
If a guy is there on site, most certainly he can shut this stuff down.
Okay.
To the point of, you know, if he has to and there's no power there, like a motor-operated valve also has a local hand wheel, and you can pull a lever and turn the hand wheel and close a valve.
You testified, sir, about the existing Senex line that's going to, for lack of a better word, be effectively decommissioned. Would you agree with me that decommissioned is a fair way to describe what's going to happen to that?
We're going to take it out of service and remove it from the ground. So, sure. Yeah.
Okay, and that was one of my questions. You're going to remove it from the ground?
Yes.
And that's, it looks to be, and I'd like you to correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks to be that existing pipeline that's proposed, the segment to be removed on Exhibit A, which is the preliminary site layout that I'm looking at, the Prosper Terminal site plan. It appears that that's on what would be the property that Senex intends to purchase. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So Senex will be purchasing that property and will be removing from the ground the existing pipeline, replacing it with the reconfigured pipeline. I'm just wondering, sir, if there are plans for how the reclamation of that removal is going to be played out, or maybe the next witness is going to testify to that. I don't know.
Well, either one of us can talk to that. It's in the application. The mechanisms or the procedures that we go through for removing topsoil, taking the subsoil, setting it off to the side, we'll remove the pipeline, then we'll put the subsoil back in and finish it up with the topsoil again so that we take it out and put it back in the same order. So
understood. And you mentioned, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
You said reclamation.
Yes.
There's also plans for reclamation in there, be it if it goes back into crop or be it if it gets planted into grass.
Understood. And as far as you had testified, sir, I thought that nitrogen would be put into the existing pipeline that's going to be removed. Is that, I'm just wondering what the purpose of that is, if you're going to remove that pipeline, what the purpose of doing the nitrogen as well?
Well, what we do is we launch just a regular maintenance pig. And then we catch it at the closest block valve. We can monitor it. We put a pill in it, if you will, an electronic pill that we can monitor where its movement is. Once it passes a block valve upstream of this facility, we close that block valve in. And then, then we bring in a nitrogen company with the big trucks, and they hook up to that spot. They push the pig then on into or on past the next block valve so that that segment of line, and in this case it's approximately 5 miles, is filled with nitrogen and all of the product has been pushed out of it. Once that's done, then we bleed the nitrogen off, and it just goes away.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see. That makes sense, and I understand what you're doing. And then at that point, then construction would then proceed on the reconfigured line and removal of the existing line. Is that right?
That's correct. The reconfigured line at that point in time will be all constructed, will be all inspected, will be hydrostatically tested and ready for use once we tie it into the existing line.
And that was going to be my next question, actually. So the plan is then it's to construct the reconfigured line, have it ready to go. Is there going to be any interruption in service, so to speak?
Yes, but we can accommodate that through the regular scheduling of the pipeline, and it'll be down for a minimum of a day, probably a maximum of 2 days by the time it takes us to push the product out of it, bleed the nitrogen off, and make the tie-ins. This one's fairly simple.
Sure. Sir, I believe that the application indicated that there were no occupied residences, businesses, or schools within 500 feet of the proposed reconfigured pipeline. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, sir. I think most of my other questions are going to be for your environmental expert, but I thank you for your time. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Prescott, questions for Mr. G?
No, Your Honor.
Yeah, I just have a couple questions, I guess. I want to get a better sense. I mean, I've reviewed the application, but I want to get a better sense for, you know, what's the essential reason for this facility? Is it additional storage, basically?
It is. And that kind of goes back to our refinery. You know, during winter months, product demand is down. And the best utilization of a refinery is to keep it running because the net cost per barrel that you put through there is to add incremental barrels to it is really a low cost item. So as much as we can keep it running during, let's say, the winter months or the off season months, the better off we are. Well, we get to those points in time where product is not leaving the terminals. I mean, winter months, product, you know, gasoline demand is down, diesel demand is down, and then all of a sudden spring comes along and we're hit with high demands for diesel fuel, in particular for farming operations, followed shortly thereafter with high gasoline demand in the summer for the traveling season. So if we can position refined product somewhere other than just sitting in our refinery in Laurel, where all of a sudden everybody needs it and we can't get it there that quick with our pipeline, we're in much better position to have it staged in different places with tankage. Just to give you an example, we just got through building a large tank at our Glendive terminal for the very reason that we're doing this, to hold additional product for that area. We just got through building a large tank at our Minot terminal for the very same reason, and now we're looking towards the end of our pipeline system for that capability also.
Okay, so that helps make him clear to me what the point is. So you refine this product in Laurel, Montana, mm-hmm. and then you move it east, basically, and it comes to these various tank battery locations where you can store it for when it's needed nearer to those locations.
That's correct.
But that way you can keep the refining going. And then another question that you just raised by your response was, so some of the product that goes through this is diesel fuel, some of it is gasoline?
That's correct.
And is it the same line? Do you vary the product depending on the day or the time, or how does that work?
We do what's called a batching operation down the pipeline system. We'll put in like a 30,000 barrel batch of gasoline in Laurel. And so that'll stretch out, and I don't remember exactly, that'll stretch out probably close to 100 miles of pipeline. And then the next product that goes in the line is diesel fuel. And so it just goes in right behind the gasoline. And there is an area in there that compromises about, and I'm going to give you a number, anywhere from 50 to 100 barrels of the product that becomes somewhat intermixed. But that transmix, we call it, moves down the line in a pretty orderly manner, and then when it gets to the end of the line, we can cut it out, put it into a slop tank, and then blend it back in, depending, you know, and that's blended back in based on the qualities of the fuel that you have as to how much tolerance it has to take some of this intermixed product.
So is that the purpose for the three large tanks at this facility? They're going to be, one might be containing diesel, another might be containing gasoline, something like that?
Tell you what, we're building all three tanks with internal floating roofs in them so that we can switch to any product we want at any time. All we have to do is pull the, you know, if we want to switch, if it's in gasoline service and we want to switch it to diesel fuel service, we've got center sumps that we can pull out of and completely drain the tank and then switch it into another service.
So just kind of give me the route then that it follows. It goes from Laurel. Is Glendive the buildings? I mean, where does it first get stopped in a way and then move to the next?
We do have kind of three segments of our line. The first segment goes from the Laurel Billings area to our terminal. We have a terminal in Glendive. And then product goes past there to our terminal in Minot, which is a similar facility. And then from Minot, we pump over here to Fargo. And we don't have a terminal here. When we built the pipeline in 1991, we entered into a deal with, it was Williams Pipeline at the time that owned the what's now the Magellan Terminal, and we deliver into their terminal.
Okay. So the eastern termination point for your facilities is the Fargo area, basically.
Correct.
Okay. All right. I don't think I have any other questions right now. Mr. Mann, any redirect?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Pelham, anything further?
No, sir.
Ms. Prescott?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. G, you can step down.
Thank you.
I think we'll start with your next witness and go for a little while before we take a break, if that's okay.
Sure.
Mr. Jim Dawson will be my next witness.
Mr. Dawson, you were sitting there when I gave the perjury admonition, so I'm assuming that you heard it. Have you raised your right hand? You promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Thank you.
Jim, could you please state your name and give us your business address?
My name is Jim Dawson. My business address is 116 North 4th Street, Suite 200, Bismarck, North Dakota, 58501.
And Jim, by whom are you employed and in what capacity?
I'm employed by SWCA Environmental Consultants as a senior project manager.
And could you describe your qualifications with respect to environmental projects and permitting?
I'm a professional geologist and certified hazardous materials manager with extensive field, regulatory, managerial, and consulting experience throughout the United States. My professional experience includes contaminated soil and groundwater investigation, monitoring, and remediation projects, environmental site assessments and due diligence activities, solid and hazardous waste management, environmental regulatory permitting and compliance assistance, and groundwater resources studies. As a senior environmental specialist and project manager, I have provided regulatory compliance consulting services for oil and gas operations, including environmental site assessments and due diligence activities. I have performed stormwater permitting and inspections, prepared spill prevention, contingency, and countermeasure plans, facility response plans, and pipeline spill response plans, and I've conducted spill investigations, assessments, and cleanup services, and provided investigation and cleanup and remediation of reserve pits and legacy contamination sites.
Jim, were you the person who was primarily responsible for conducting the environmental review on this project and for preparation of the application?
Yes.
And were you involved in the preparation of the environmental and cultural resource reports to the Public Service Commission that are set forth in the application, which is Senex's exhibit number one?
Yes.
And is the purpose of your testimony today to address the environmental and cultural resource matters pertaining to the proposed Prosper Terminal project?
Yes.
And what was the study area for the Prosper Terminal project?
Senex defined the study area as a 1-mile diameter or a half a mile radius around the perimeter of the proposed project area.
Has a cultural resource investigation been completed for the Prosper Terminal project?
Yes. A Class 1 cultural resource inventory of the site was conducted on October 19, 2015, and a Class 3 cultural resource inventory was conducted on October 21, 2015.
And what are the results of the cultural resource investigation?
During the Class 1 and Class 3 inventories, no cultural resources were identified within the project area. SWCA recommended to the State Historical Society of North Dakota that the project be granted a determination of no historic properties affected and clearance to proceed as planned. The State Historical Society of North Dakota concurred on November 20, 2015, providing, quote, no historic properties affected and no significant sites affected determinations for the Prosper Terminal property. SWCA prepared an unanticipated discovery plan for cultural resources identified during construction of the proposed Senex Prosper Terminal in Cass County, North Dakota, and submitted it to the State Historical Office for the project. The State Historical Society reviewed the project correspondence and document and found it acceptable by a letter dated December 9, 2015. The concurrence letters have been filed with the Public Service Commission.
Jim, do you have a copy up there of what has been marked and admitted as Exhibit Number 3?
Yes.
And is that a copy of the November 20th, 2015 letter from the State Historical Society to William Harding with your office? Providing the no historic properties affected and no significant sites affected determinations for the project?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And you also have a copy of what has been marked and admitted as Exhibit Number 4?
Yes.
And is that a copy of the December 9th, 2015 letter from the State Historical Society to your office confirming the that the unanticipated discovery plan for cultural resources was acceptable?
Yes. Okay.
And has a wetland assessment been completed for the Prosper Terminal project?
Yes.
And what are the results of the wetland assessment?
There are no wetlands or water bodies within the project area.
And what studies were completed with regard to the biological resources?
A threatened and endangered species assessment was conducted. The assessment did not reveal any threatened or endangered species or critical habitat areas of concern. No wildlife species were observed during the field survey, and no raptors or raptor nests were observed.
Are there any exclusion areas described in the described by North Dakota law and regulation which will be affected by the project?
No.
Are there any avoidance areas as described in North Dakota law and regulations which will be affected by the proposed project?
No.
And with respect to the Public Service Commission's selection criteria, please identify any potential impacts from the project.
The selection criteria are addressed on pages 25 to 28 of the application, but I'll briefly highlight the findings. The project will impact up to 63 acres of farmland, and there may be short-term construction impacts. Temporary noise, air quality, and visual effects would occur during active construction, during which time heavy equipment will be operated. The duration of these effects will be relatively short-term as they are connected to the facility construction.
And with respect to the Public Service Commission's policy criteria, please identify any potential impacts from the project.
The policy criteria are addressed on pages 28 and 29 of the application, but I'll briefly address the applicable criteria that are impacted. It is anticipated that approximately 25 to 45 employees will be employed during peak construction of the facility. Local businesses will benefit from the demands for goods and services generated by the construction workforce. The refined petroleum products transported to and stored by the project will be delivered to New Star Refined Products Terminals located in Moorhead, Sauk City, and Roseville, Minnesota. From these terminals, the refined petroleum products will be delivered to customers in both North Dakota and Minnesota. The supply transported will also better enable both Senex and NuStar to meet the gasoline and diesel fuel needs of North Dakota consumers from the centrally located terminals while still meeting the needs of downstream customers. The project will enhance the refined petroleum product supply capabilities of both systems.
And Jim, what other permits or authorizations are necessary for the project, and what is the status of those permits or authorizations?
Permits and authorizations needed for the project are provided in Table 1 on page 20 of the application. In addition to the Certificate of Corridor Compatibility and Route Permit, other permits needed will be a construction stormwater permit, stormwater pollution prevention plan, and a temporary dewatering and hydrostatic discharge permit, both from the North Dakota Department of Health. An air quality permit to construct must also be obtained from the North Dakota Department of Health, and Senex must secure a building permit from Raymond Township for the project.
And have you engaged in consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service?
Yes, a letter was submitted to them notifying them of the proposed project. And at this time, a response has not been received.
And in addition to the mitigation measures that you've already discussed, will other mitigation measures be undertaken?
Yes, Senex has developed an environmental mitigation plan attached as Appendix B to the application. The environmental mitigation plan provides more detailed discussion of the guidelines and mitigation measures that Senex would implement during this project. The measures set forth in the plan meet or exceed applicable industry standards and regulatory requirements.
And Jim, to date, have any state or federal agencies objected to this project?
No. A copy of Senex's agency communications is included in Appendix D.
And Jim, in your opinion, are the facilities of such length, design, location, or purpose that they will produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota?
Yes.
And are the facilities compatible with the environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources?
Yes.
And will the operation of the facilities, as set forth in the application and testified to today, minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity, and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion?
Yes.
I have no further questions for Mr. Dawson at this time.
Mr. Pelham, questions for Mr. Dawson.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Dawson. Just a couple questions for you. You were talking about necessary permits from the Department of Health for hydrostatic testing and other requirements for the proposed pipeline and construction. Do you know the status of those permits? Have they been applied for, or are they anticipated they will be applied for?
They will be applied for. The stormwater permit has to be applied for by submitting a notice of intent 7 days before construction starts. For the temporary discharge permit, it's a 30-day submittal time period before the anticipated discharge date.
And note that there was one identified stream in the study area. It's on page 16, section 14.2. Desktop analysis identified one stream totally approximately 1.35 river miles. Can you speak to that stream as to having, what has been done by Senex to mitigate any potential issues with that area?
Well, any sort of runoff from the proposed Prosper Terminal site would be managed through the stormwater permit and the stormwater pollution prevention plan. It's not anticipated that there would be any sort of runoff in that direction. Sure. From the facility.
And this stream is non-jurisdictional, I assume. It's been determined.
We have not made requested to the Corps of Engineers an official jurisdictional determination. That would be the Probably the lower branch of the Rush River.
Okay. There was correspondence to the Corps.
Correct.
And as I understand it, there wasn't any response, or am I mistaken on that?
No, there's in Appendix D in the application.
Okay.
There is the response from the Corps, basically indicating that if jurisdictional waters are found or may be impacted, that one would require a permit from them.
Okay. Would that be handled by Senex under Section 12 then? Would that be a Section 12 permit?
Well, yeah, Nationwide Permit 12.
Yeah.
Is what is the permit that they would have to operate under.
Okay. At this point, though, just to be clear, because I'm not understanding completely, then this particular stream that was identified, I guess I'm just wondering what it is that Senex considers this stream to be then, and how it's going to address that particular stream in the study area for this project.
Well, when we did the desktop analysis for the site, we used USGS, National Hydrograph Database, and anything that shows up at a scale of 1 to 100,000 is what is identified as a stream, or a lot of times it's intermittent. You know, the Maple River is perennial. I was out at the site yesterday, and the lower branch of the Rush River has got some water in it, but it doesn't appear to be flowing at this time.
Okay.
So.
And the stormwater prevention plan would address those issues if there were issues.
Plus, I believe it, as you can see on the preliminary drawing over there, there is a stormwater pond that's indicated.
Right.
And that would catch runoff from the construction area, I would presume.
The witness is indicating to the preliminary site layout, which is the Prosper Terminal site plan. There's a large poster board of it, too, behind me. But for purposes of the record, it is Exhibit A and contained in Exhibit A. Thank you, Mr. Dawson. I don't have any other questions.
Ms. Prescott, questions for Mr. Dawson?
No, Your Honor. I don't have any questions either, so. Anything else, Mr. Mann?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Dawson, you can step down.
Okay.
Mr. Mann, was there any other witnesses you wanted to call?
I have no further witnesses I intend to call at this time. I would request the ability to call witnesses in rebuttal if necessary.
Okay. Mr. Pelham, do you have any witnesses to call?
No witnesses, no.
Okay. All right. Well, then what we'll do is we'll take about a 10-minute break here. We'll come back at 10:20. And at that time, there'll be opportunity for public input. I'd just like to get a show of hands. Is there anybody that wants to testify here today? Okay, I see about a half a dozen. Okay, and you signed in on the sign-in sheet? Okay. All right. If you have any questions about how you're going to go about your testimony or anything, you can ask me during the break in the next 10 minutes or so.